And it like echoes across the room. Yeah.
That's great. The
one word they all know.
That's right.
Two words.
All right. So we're in Proverbs 8 tonight, and we stopped kind of halfway through. This is the second to last speech from Lady Wisdom in the book, and I have outlines here. Since this is y'all's first time here, probably about welcome to one. Oh, and I don't have it shared on the screen for you guys. I'll throw that up super quick. But we've been talking about these speeches from Lady Wisdom. And let me share the screen so y'all can see that as well. All right. Thank you, listening. Appreciate that contribution. All right. So in this speech, Lady Wisdom has been, again, this is kind of where like it switches to first person. And she's making her call, like, hey, listen to me, please. I can offer you these things. You'll be blessed if you listen. This is more valuable than the most valuable things that you know. And she's going to end the speech tonight talking about, this is kind of maybe the greatest sales pitch in all of the opening chapters of Proverbs. There's been a lot of them. But she's going to talk about how the Lord used her, Lady Wisdom, to create the cosmos. So this is going to be a really cool section here. So let's read Proverbs 8, verses 22 through 31. And we'll just go around here. Tim, would you mind reading that for us? Proverbs 8, 22 through 31.
Sure. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts of old. Ages ago, I was set up. At the first, before the beginning of the earth. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no springs abounding with water. Before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills, I was brought forth. Before he had made the earth with its fields, or the first of the dust of the world. When he established the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep. When he made firm the skies above. When he established the fountains of the deep, when he assigned to the sea its limit, so that the waters might not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him, like a master workman, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always, rejoicing in his inhabited world, and delighting in the children of man.
All right. So this is really cool. So again, Wisdom is speaking in first person here, kind of a point of view perspective. And where was she at the beginning of all things?
Right there with God.
Right there with God. And it says that the Lord possessed me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts of old. Ages ago, I was set up at the first, before the beginning of the earth, before there, when there were no depths, I was brought forth. So it's almost like God creates wisdom and then uses wisdom to create all other things. And again, this is figurative language. I don't think this is a literal thing, but it's like God made everything with wisdom. That's a principle that like God didn't make things randomly. He didn't make them ineffectively. He made them using the principles of wisdom. And so wisdom personified was there with him at the beginning.
I'm trying to think how to say this because as I'm reading this in my mind, it's making me think about all the order that he created and the way that things work together. And things like gravity and chemical reactions and life that he created, it's all part. He didn't just create this object and this object, but they will have, there's laws that bound how they react with each other and act towards each other and whatnot. And I know it's more than just that, if it is that at all, but it's making me think about the natural world that God created and set into order. And maybe there's a degree to which this could be taken almost literally, like he kind of set up the framework and then start building stuff inside of it. I don't know. Or maybe it was all simultaneous.
Right. On what day did God build the laws of physics? Day did God build the laws of chemistry? It's like, it's just all built in as he went. Right. And this is, means a lot coming from a chemical engineer and someone who studied this stuff and you use this all the time. But it's amazing. Like the more you study the created world, it's like, this is not random. This is this is incredibly complex. And we think we're smart, but like we tweak one thing and we don't realize all of the unintended consequences and chain reactions that happen when we start messing with stuff. And God has let us in our limited wisdom do some pretty cool things with his creation. It's pretty amazing the way we can manipulate and use. But who started it? Who made it stable enough? Because like we, with all of our flawed perception, would have set it up in a way that like it was going to self-destruct or like blow up. It's like, no, but God's done this in a good way.
I can't remember where I read this or where I saw it. Hopefully it's true. But, you know, nobody lies on the internet. but somebody did the math where if you took the earth and moved it a centimeter over, just that small change, nothing bigger than a cockroach would be able to live on earth, which is how much that would affect it. It was just a crazy amount of results just from something that small move, something so big just moving over that little bit would be enough to set off the.
And even if it's not just a centimeter,
right,
there's some small amount,
right,
that
right,
if it
right.
shifts it, that like we couldn't have nailed that precision. Mm-hmm. You know,
exactly. Cut a piece of wood straight right.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's so fine-tuned, it's so amazing. And even the resilience, like the human immune system is incredible. Like the fact that like it can encounter something and then way faster than all of our scientists and stuff come up with like, okay, like here's an immune response, like boom. Like it's incredible. The things that the Lord built into the cosmos, into the human body, into outer space. And like, it really, it's mind blowing.
And just to add to that, that within his creation, he created beings that can study the creation
right.
and mimic it and question it and appreciate it and begin to understand it.
Yes. In Psalm 104, Psalm 104 is a psalm that basically walks through Genesis chapter 1 and goes through the days of creation and rejoices. But in Psalm 104, verse 24, it says, O Lord, how manifold are your works. In wisdom have you made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. I just think that sums up this section, that like wisdom was there. And it's not like wisdom taught God or something. It's like God is wisdom. He's the source of wisdom. But the way it's pictured here is almost like God created, you know, wisdom. And then it's like, all right, wisdom, like, help me out here, like, and makes everything. It's like, all right, well, how can we do this with wisdom? How can we do this wisely? And so it's almost like we're invited into God's world here. Like, I have made the world with wisdom, and now I'm offering you my wisdom. And if you live with wisdom, you're living in God's created world in the way he intended for you to live. And that is just like so important to realize that, because our world is so broken. And is working, there's so many things working against the created order. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it feels like we're being foolish to go against the tide that we feel and see. But actually, when we live with God's wisdom, we're actually living, I've heard it put this way, like along the grain of the universe. Mm-hmm. Like God created the universe in wisdom. And when we live according to his rules, even if the whole world has gone crazy and is foolish, we are actually living the way we're supposed to live, even though nobody realizes it. And that makes it hard, because it sometimes doesn't feel wise. It feels like, am I being foolish to like listen to this book and like do it this way? It's like, no, actually, this is ancient wisdom from God himself. And when we live according to these principles, it's not a surprise that like this works. This actually is the way we're supposed to live. So I just think that's a cool thought. Other thoughts or comments just on the language here? I mean, she talks about all the things that she saw when she was there with God at the beginning. about the deeps coming forth, the mountains. I mean, what's older than the mountains? You know, it's like she saw the beginning of like the oldest things that we can imagine. And it's kind of cool to me because do you remember in the book of Job when Job has questioned God? Mm-hmm. And at the end, God shows up to Job. And what kind of questions does he ask him?
Were you there when?
Were you there? Excuse me. Where were you when I made the earth and brought forth the deep and did all? And wisdom's like, I was there, you know, and Job's like, I was not. I've spoken about what I didn't understand. So that's kind of a cool connection in the wisdom books here is like wisdom was there. And if God asked wisdom those questions, he'd be like, yeah, I was totally there when that happened. So that's just a cool contrast there. I think this is also cool. Look at verse 31. What was wisdom rejoicing in? Like as all this is happening,
in his
inhabited world. Yeah, it's like wisdom and God like work together, if you will, to like make this. And it's like look at what we made, and also rejoicing in the children of man. Like look at mankind. Like God used wisdom to make humans as well. Like we are fearfully and wonderfully made, and it's just kind of cool to think about. And God saw that it was good, and so did wisdom. Like wisdom was like, yes, this is good. This is right. Like well done. And of course things have gone crazy since then, but it's just cool to think about that beginning point and about God through wisdom creating all of these things. Other thoughts or comments on this creation section here?
Just that verse 31 reminds me of the "This is my Father's world."
Yeah,
so it's just cool.
It is. Amen. Yes.
I was just thinking about how, I think it's in Romans 1, how it talks about that there are things we can learn about God by seeing what he created. And just kind of in this section where it's talking about that God created wisdom and made the world with wisdom. And so when we look around and see how amazing everything is, that we're also learning things about who God is. We can't know everything about his revealed will just by looking at nature, but just seeing the way he did things and how wise it is. And even just think about how God used beauty in creating the world. You know, if we were trying to design a like water purification and dispersal system, like something as beautiful as clouds would not be what like humankind, like there would be like pipes or, you know,
right,
like,
right, yeah.
It's just interesting to think about like how wise God was in making everything work, being able to make it work in a way that reflected his own creative powers and the beauty that he created. I just think it's interesting to think about,
yes,
God in wisdom. It's not just that it functions, but also that it's beautiful and shows us things about him.
Yes, amen. That is so true. And like how many things that humans have created that we think are so cool are actually just a crude imitation of what God has originally done. You know, like something like a car or whatever, you know, it's like, okay, like 4 points of contact on the ground. It's got a chassis. It's got a circulation system. Well, this is an animal, but it's just goes really fast on smooth stuff, you know, like, and again, it's like most of mankind's things that we figured out are just imitations of and variations of what God through wisdom has already done. So that's really cool. I will throw this out here. I don't want to go too far down this rabbit trail tonight, but every once in a while, you might run across someone who says something like this. Well, who represents all of God's wisdom in the New Testament? This is not a hard answer, a hard one. What was that? Very good. Jesus, right? Jesus is God's wisdom from above. I mean, 1 Corinthians says like he became to us wisdom and, you know, power. And there are people who will try to go to the Old Testament and say, actually, this passage is talking about Jesus. And they will say, this is who he is. But here's the thing you got to watch out for. Look at in verses 22, 23, 24, how is wisdom described here?
Something created.
And they will try to argue from this text, well, Jesus is wisdom. And you say like, well, yes, Jesus is the manifestation of all wisdom. But Jesus is not created. And sometimes they'll go to passages like Colossians chapter 1 and say, well, he's the firstborn of creation. Well, what does firstborn mean? Born first, right? And they'll go to like Revelation 3 and things and say, well, he's the firstborn of God or whatever. And I don't want to get into like a whole debate tonight, but I want us to see that there's still a distinction between the Lord and between wisdom. They are very closely related. But the Lord has no beginning. Wisdom has a beginning. And yes, Jesus is the manifestation of all wisdom, but Jesus is more than just wisdom, and he has no beginning. If you ever run across someone who's making the firstborn argument, there's a helpful passage in the Old Testament in Psalm 89 that talks about God making David the firstborn. Was David the firstborn?
Not by any means.
No, he was the last born that we know of, right? I mean, but he was made the firstborn. Firstborn doesn't always mean born first. It can mean the one with the preeminence, the one with the highest position. And Jesus is the firstborn in that sense. He is given the highest position in all creation, even though he was created, in a sense, not originally, but he came into creation. And that's like kind of mind-blowing, right? It's like he had no beginning, and yet he came as a baby, you know, like, and again, this gets into like the mind-blowing nature of Jesus coming into the creation that he made. Amazing stuff to contemplate, and a lot of questions that we don't have complete answers to. But I wanted to say that about Proverbs 8, because you might run into somebody at some point who tries to misuse this text, and I just wanted to kind of put that flag there for you. If you do run into that, there are ways to answer that argument. Comments or thoughts on that?
Yeah, if somebody brings up the Colossians 1:15, the firstborn of all creation, there's a really good passage helps with that, and that's Colossians 1:16.
The verse after.
Just keep reading. It says, "For by him all things were created, all things in heaven and earth," and it says, "And all things were created through him and for him." So,
right. And they would argue that, well, that's right. He created Jesus first, and then through Jesus, he created everything else. But again, once you get into the, well, what does firstborn really mean?
Yeah.
And establish that does not have to be born first. Right. And it goes through that. But yeah, it is helpful that it should explain itself.
It should.
Yes. It should. Always keep reading. Context mm-hmm. is so, so important. Okay. So coming back to Proverbs 8, let's finish out the chapter. And again, wisdom has just given like, I mean, what greater thing could you put on your resume than like created the world with God, you know, like everything you see. Yeah, that was me. Like, that's incredible. And so now listen to what she says at the end. April, would you mind reading Proverbs 8:32 through 36?
"And now, O sons, listen to me. Blessed are those who keep my ways. Hear instruction and be wise, and do not neglect it. Blessed is the one who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting beside my doors. For whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who fails to find me injures himself. All who hate me love death."
What is wisdom's request? What is her invitation at the end of this amazing chapter?
Listen to me.
I mean, that's really the thing, right? Is like, wisdom is crying out. Remember at the beginning of the chapter, does not wisdom call? Does not understanding raise her voice? And we're about to see that again in chapter 9. But we're so thick-headed that like we can hear wisdom herself calling out to us and be like, pretty sure I've got a better way. You know, like my friend over here, like he seems to have it all together. So like, thanks, but no thanks, wisdom. I'm going to go. And she's like, no, like don't. That's so foolish. And yet that's what we do, right? All the time. And she's like, please listen to me. You will be blessed if you listen to me. And notice what she says, the person who finds me, the person who fails to find me, and the person who hates me in verses 35 and 36. What happens to the one who finds wisdom?
It's favor from God.
Yeah. I mean, she's connected to Yahweh himself. If you find wisdom, that's a blessing from the Lord. If you fail to find wisdom, what happens?
Injuring yourself.
Yeah, you're cruising for a bruising. Like, this is not going to go well. And if you hate wisdom, you love death. I mean, wow, that's a, like, who would say, like, yeah, I love death, you know, like, but the thing is, if you see wisdom and you're like, I hate that, I don't want that, wisdom's like, well, then you love death. Like, that's really the alternative, is like, you're going to hate something that's going to destroy you. And it doesn't feel that way in the moment, but wisdom puts it very starkly. Like, if you hate me, you ultimately, you love death, because that's really all that's left to you, is my ways are the ways of life, the ways of blessing and abundance. And if you don't love this way, you're a fool, and it's gonna kill you. Thoughts or questions through Proverbs chapter 8? Any comments online? I know you guys are quiet tonight. That's totally fine. But just always remember, I can't see your hands because you're this tiny box in the corner. So if you have comments and questions, just say, hey, Stephen, or whatever, and we'll get y'all in here.
Okay. I have a comment.
Yeah, go ahead.
With chapter 8, it's really cool to see that where she says, and I'm going back to verse 31, that she rejoices. You know, I feel like she's like a, God is the boss and she's like the supervisor. And I don't know, it's just a weird way. She's a supervisor. She wants to make sure that you know what you have to do. And I think of her as a supervisor because you have to follow the rules or you're going to get written up. You know, she's not going to play any game. Like the boss, he's like, I love you. Come on in. I like all my employees here. And this is what I have for you. But the supervisor, this is what you have to do. If you don't do it, you're going to get written up. If you do this again, this is what's going to happen. That's how I see it. I don't know why I see it that way, but that's how I see it. But
yeah,
it's
I
really
hear
cool that she rejoices. She rejoices that you're going to follow the rules without her having to, you know, and whatever you don't do, you're hurting yourself. You know,
yes.
Not like you're hurting someone else, but you're hurting yourself by not listening to her. And she doesn't pretend, or there's no guessing. She tells you exactly how it is. You know, what you see is what you get. That's what I just wanted to say that.
yeah, that's a great perspective. And I think that's right, is that God and wisdom, in a sense, you know, don't want us to fail. They're crying out and saying, please, please, I want you to do well. I want you to succeed. I'm not like sitting here waiting with a hammer to like smack you. I mean, if you don't listen, then life's going to smack you. But if you'll listen, things will go really well. And so they're rooting for us here.
Tim. Yeah, one last thought, that the rejoicing in the inhabited world and delighting in the children of man reminds me of the creation story in Genesis, that God looked and saw that it was good, very good.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Stephen, sorry, I had one quick comment. Down in verse 34, I think it's interesting. You know, you mentioned just now, and we've looked at this before, that, you know, in some places it describes wisdom as calling out. And, you know, if wisdom, you know, its personification, you know, wants us to find her and to listen to her. But it also describes in verse 34, you know, blessings upon the one who, you know, is watching, my translation says, watching daily at my gates and waiting at the post of my doors. And so there's also the idea of us seeking out wisdom and, you know, waiting for it, even like, you know, waiting to see, you know, what's the wise thing to do here, and trying to observe wisdom. And so, you know, for the one who's going to be blessed by it, I think there's also this idea of, you know, we need to seek it out, and, you know, be very watchful for wisdom. And make every effort we can to gain wisdom.
Yes, amen. That's a great point. And that's been the point, the course through like all these chapters, right? It's like, seek me more than gold. Seek me more than the greatest thing you know, and you'll be blessed. But wisdom doesn't just come and bonk you over the head necessarily. Life lessons will do that, but you need to seek wisdom to find her. Let's read chapter 9. We're going to read this in three parts. And what's interesting is part one and part three. I want you guys to watch for how similar these are, because we're going to have the crossroads again, and we're going to have two women crying out and trying to get our attention in this chapter, and kind of a tug of war, if you will, between these. So let's listen to one of the women in Proverbs 9, verses 1 through 6. And Amy, would you mind reading that for us?
Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn her seven pillars. She has slaughtered her beasts. She has mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her young women to call from the highest places in the town. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. To him who lacks sense, she says, come eat of my bread and drink of the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and live and walk in the way of insight.
All right. So it kind of pictures here, where is wisdom when she's calling out?
Her house.
Yeah. What's her house like?
Got a big fancy house and she has an amazing feast.
Yeah, man. I mean, this is where you want to be. It's got like, I mean, I don't know why I picture one of those old like antebellum homes with the pillars out front. It's got like seven pillars. That's probably not the idea. But like, you know, that's the idea. It's like you want to make it look cool. You put pillars out front and you're like, man, this is like wow, smart people live here. Like rich people live here. Like whatever. Like, so she's built her house. She's got seven pillars. It's probably more the idea of like stability and seven is complete. But I picture the antebellum house. So you get the idea. So she's hewn her house or she's built her house, hewn her pillars. She's killed the fatted calf, so to speak. She's got a big feast. She's set the table, and then it's her young women kind of going up. So she's just got like a house full of like servants, right? So she's got like people under her who are going out. And who are they calling to in verse 4?
Simple.
Yeah. I mean, and it's kind of hard, right? Hey, stupid people, like, get in here. Ignorant people, like, come to my house. But like, that's kind of part of the deal, though, isn't it? It's like, if we're going to listen to wisdom, what do we have to realize? We're simple. We're the ignorant ones, and we need what she has to offer. They're like, that's a really cool feast, but like, I got to listen. I got to be willing to accept what she's offering me. Whoever's simple, let him turn in here. To him who lacks sense, she says. And what's the next invitation in verse 5? Yeah, eat bread, drink the wine and mixed. So it's like this invitation to eat and drink. This is going to have a lot of like New Testament parallels, right? Like come, like living water, you know, like bread of life. Like this is the gospel invitation, right? Isaiah 55 as well, like he who's thirsty, come eat, you know, drink of the water of life without cost. Like it's free. Like he's not saying like you have to be rich to come here. You just have to realize you're simple and come in. But here's the catch. Do you see what the catch is? What's verse 6?
You have to leave your simple ways.
Leave your simple ways and live. What's like the thing we want to hold on to the most?
The way we want to do things.
Our ways. Like my way. Like the way I want to do stuff is like one of the most precious things to me. And I'll pay lots of money to go to that feast. Like, oh yeah, like just tell me what I got to do. But I want to keep living my way. I'll pay you. I'll give up a lot of other stuff. But like, don't make me change. Don't make me repent. But that's what she says. Like, if you want this feast, you can come in. You don't have to pay a dime. You just got to change. You got to forget. And notice she says, leave your simple ways. And again, that's part of that humility, right? We have to realize that we're the simple ones and our ways are the simple ways. They're the stupid ways. And when we realize that, it makes it a whole lot easier to say, you know what? Your way is better. I need to leave my way and I need to go to your house and eat what you've prepared. And so she's offering, leave your simple ways and live and walk in the way of insight. She's saying, this is better. But the thing is, we have to be convinced that it's actually better, because most of the time when we hear wisdom crying out and we see the feast she's got, we're like, ah, I think I'm good, because we think we have something better because we like it more. But we have to realize that's me being stupid. That's me being simple. That's me being ignorant and not realizing what a feast has been given. It's a little bit like, you know, like C.S. Lewis. There's that one C.S. Lewis quote that's pretty cool where he's like, it's not that our desires are too great. It's that our desires are too little. Like we're content making mud pies in over here when we're being offered a holiday at the sea. Have you ever read that quote? It's pretty interesting. But it's like the idea of like God is offering us so much, and not just in terms of like worldly wealth and wisdom. We've talked about that. But we get content with like, no, I'm cool. My way's good. And you're like, dude, your way is leaving you wrecked. Like why do you think this way is good? And like, we can see it in everybody else's life, right? It's like, we look around and we're like, hey, bro, hey, sister, like, do you realize that you're banging your head against a wall? Like, why do you keep doing this and expecting it to work? It doesn't work. If you would just listen to God, like, this would be so much better. And they're like, no, I'm good. I'm going to keep doing that. Like, I hear you, appreciate it. But like, and that's wisdom here, saying like, no, like, I got a big feast here at the house, but like, you won't come in. Please listen, but you got to leave your simple ways and live. I saw, did you, when you guys have a hand or, yeah, Jack.
Is this kind of similar to the parable of the wedding feast that Jesus talked about, where there was like that one guy who wasn't prepared? He's like, why aren't you dressed for the feast? And he's like, I don't know. Like, I kick him out. Is it kind of similar to that, where she's asking them to come partake of the feast, but you have to change and you have to be prepared? Or am I just kind of stretching a bit?
You know, I don't know. I've never thought about that. Because I do think in that context, there's a warning for the Jews who rejected the invitation. The Gentiles are brought in, but the Gentiles also have to repent and like put on wedding clothes, okay. Which is the idea of like repenting. Okay. So I think there may be a connection there. I always hesitate to say no because there's so many connections.
Right. But with the context, like the idea itself, sure, but with the context is very different.
Yeah, maybe, but I will say this, the more you read the parables of Jesus and the more you read the Proverbs, the more you're like, yeah, Jesus is, he's the one who wrote this, right? Yeah. So like he uses patterns and he uses, and I mean, again, we talked about the bread and the water and like the feast. There are definitely connections there with the thematic ideas. I don't know if specifically the wedding garment and the thing are connected, but again, I hesitate to say absolutely not, because the Proverbs are definitely a backdrop for a lot of Jesus' teaching.
Amy? I was kind of thinking of the verse, knock on and the door will be open to you, seeking you'll find, where she's got this house and it's beautiful and you just have to walk off your path to go knock on her door and take her feast. But you just have to make that step, and you have to take that first step, because she's not going to like come hand it out to you.
Yep, that's a great point.
Trick or treat.
In the first. Great timing, thank you. this is the best trick or treat you've ever got.
Wisdom.
That's right.
Don't go to that person. So I was feeling wisdom.
Proverbs are like, she hands out like Proverbs fortune cookies. Like,
she does. But if you don't go to her house, you love death.
Okay. All right. Coming back. So this is just really striking. And so, okay, remember some of these details in a minute, because we're going to see another invitation that sounds the same, but it's a totally different situation. So pause there. We're going to keep reading. Any other comments through verse 6 before we read the next section? Cool. Round to Joe. Would you read 7 through 12?
Oh, my, I'm in Matthew now. Okay. Yeah. We're good. All right, I'm here. So, what was it again?
Proverbs 9, 7 through 12.
Awesome. Well, whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse, and he who reproves a wicked man incurs injury. Do not reprove a scoffer, for he will hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase in learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. For by me your days will be multiplied, and years will be added to your life. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself. If you scoff, you alone will bear it.
Okay. So it's hard to tell exactly what's going on here. This is a little bit of like a interlude between two crying out sections. This may still be wisdom speaking, kind of giving an extended invitation to her house. Either way, it's going to have to do a lot with how we receive wisdom. Look at verses 7, 8, and 9. They all kind of have the same theme. And what is the difference between the wise man and the fool in this section?
The wise man will love you for correcting him.
Yes, and
the scoffer will injure you.
Yeah, I mean, if you correct a fool, like, watch out, because they're gonna lash out. And you've ever had that happen? Or like you try to tell somebody something that's actually going to help them and they lash out at you. They get defensive. They try to get you back for some reason. It's like that happens. It's a real thing. And that's a fool. you don't want to surround yourself with fools. It is a hard thing to realize when someone's a fool and to know where to draw the line.
I think a common response when you try to correct someone is like, oh, you're calling me stupid. You don't think I know what I'm doing, which is exactly what this is saying. Like, you right. have to realize your stupidity. It's just the difference in like humility.
That's exactly right. Is the fool is proud. He thinks he already has wisdom, and that's why he can't get wisdom. And so all of us coming to Proverbs, it does not matter how long we've studied, it does not matter how long we've been a Christian or followed God, we're all pretty stupid still. And we just need that humility. We've got to say, like, God, my way is not working. Like, I need your wisdom. I need your help. I need your grace. And thank God that he's gracious to us and is patient, even though we're the ones who've made a mess of our life.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because we have to admit, like, we're the simple ones, but it's also interesting on the flip side. It says, like, so you want to be wise, it's the wise man who listens to it. Like, reprove a wise man, he'll be wiser still.
Yeah.
Because I think we can also sometimes get to the point where we're just like, well, I'm just stupid. I just do stupid things, where it's almost like I embrace that I'm stupid and I just kind of want to be there, as opposed to like, if I'm relying on myself and my own think so's, that's stupid. If I'm trying to follow God and I'm like, I want to learn, then that is wise. It's not that I am then inherently wise, but it is wise of me to listen to God's wisdom.
Yes.
And that I'm trying to grow.
Any fool can choose to be wise.
Yeah.
By humbling themselves and listening. It's not that like, oh, I got to get my degree before I'm wise. Like, no, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Mm-hmm. If I humble myself and I'm like, God's ways are better than my ways, as flawed as I am, I'm going to stop thinking like Stephen and I'm going to start listening to God. It doesn't matter how stupid I've been up to that point. I've now taken a step of wisdom. Mm-hmm. And it's not because I'm so smart. It's because I finally admitted that I'm not smart. And that is the beginning of actually being wise in God's eyes. It's when I stop being wise in my own eyes. And this is the whole, like, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer thing, right? It's like, the wise man is the one continuing to get wisdom because he's humble, and the proud, you know, foolish man is continuing to eat the fruit of what he's doing, and it just kind of diverges, right? These two paths get farther and farther apart, but at any point we can turn around. And let me say, that goes both ways. I mean, Solomon was the wisest man who ever lived, and he still stopped walking in wisdom and turned around and like made a wreck of his life. But the prodigal son hit rock bottom and decided, you know what? It's way better at my dad's house. I'm going to turn around. And he got wise that day and he went home and he still got to eat the feast. And so thank God that he's merciful and gracious to us, even when we've made a mess out of our life. You just see the grace in this, see the invitation. And there is the school of hard knocks here, but there's also tremendous grace coming from God and from wisdom here. So it comes back here, verse 10, right? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Sound familiar? It's kind of cool how this whole introduction to Proverbs is bookended by that phrase. The first 9 chapters of Proverbs are the introduction to the rest of the book. It's a really long introduction. But Proverbs 1, verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, right? And or the beginning of knowledge in verse 1:7, and the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. It's got to come back to God. That is where wisdom begins. And then there's again another little promise here at the end. By me, your days will be multiplied. Years will be added to your life. If you're wise, you're wise for yourself. If you scoff, you alone will bear it. What does verse 12 mean? You're wise for yourself. And if you scoff, you alone will bear it.
Maybe it's the idea the responsibility for this lies on you and the results also come back to you.
Yeah, I think it's a you reap what you sow kind of a thing. Like, if you're wise, ultimately you're the one who's going to benefit from that. You're wise for yourself. Now, he's not just saying that selfishly. He's just saying, like, realistically, if you make wise decisions, that will be the thing that benefits you. If you scoff, that's on you. You alone will bear it. Like, you will reap a scoffer's reward if you do that. So I think this is just the law of the farm. You sow what you reap, kind of an idea there. Okay, thoughts or comments on the interlude here, maybe extended invitation from Lady Wisdom. Thoughts or comments on that?
Stephen?
Yeah, go ahead.
That verse 12 makes me think of that passage in the Sermon on the Mount where, you know, the Pharisees what do something or show off and they have their reward. That's a paraphrase. But, you know, I mean, they don't get the wisdom from God if they're just bragging about themselves and exalt themselves and don't humble themselves, you know?
Yes. Great point. I mean, the Pharisees are great examples of fools who think they're wise. That's a good connection to make. All right. So don't forget part one and the invitation from Lady Wisdom. Let's read the end of chapter 9 here and see the contrast. We're around to Matt. Would you mind reading 13 through 18?
The woman folly is loud. She is seductive and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house. She takes a seat on the highest places of the town, calling to those who pass by who are going straight on their way. Whoever is simple, let him turn and hear. And to him who lacks sense, she says, stolen water is sweet. And bread eaten is secret, in secret is pleasant. But he does not know that, not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol.
Sheol, the grave. So who's this woman? We've seen her a little bit before, but who is this?
Folly.
Folly. So just like wisdom is personified, now foolishness or folly is the opposite of wisdom. And she is personified here as well. And what is she like? Again, remember, where was wisdom when wisdom was crying out?
In her house.
In her antebellum house, you know, like crying out. What about folly? What's going on here? What contrast do you start to see?
She's like walking through the streets, yeah?
Yeah, she's just like, she's sitting at her on her porch and calling out to people as they pass by. Now, she takes her seat at the highest place of the town, and that may be her exalting herself, or it may just be that she's at the place at the crossroads or whatever. But she's calling out too, but do you see, what words does she use in verse 16?
Whoever's simple.
Same words.
Yeah. Right, it's the same exact words that Lady Wisdom was saying. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. So one lady's crying out, hey, whoever's simple, let him turn in here. And what do you hear from the other side of the street? Whoever's simple, let him turn in here. And you're like, well, wait a minute. Like, which one do I listen to? That sounds exactly the same. And the deal is, sometimes it sounds exactly the same, but it has two very different outcomes. And what do you need to figure it out? Your wisdom. You need to figure out, okay, like, how do I listen to the right voice? And that's really part of wisdom, right? Is knowing who to listen to. That because there's a lot of things posing as wisdom and saying, oh, this is wisdom. This is why. And it sounds smart, man. I mean, there might be some really smart person who said it, or a lot of people who say they're smart who follow it. But we got to decide, is that actually wisdom or is it not? And how are we going to tell? We have to listen to the Lord and whose ways line up with his ways. So what else do you notice about the woman folly before we move into the next part here in verses 13 and 14?
Loud and seductive.
Yeah. This is reminding us of who, of what other figure from earlier in Proverbs.
Lady in chapter 7.
Yes. There's a lot of connections to the lady in chapter 7 where she's loud and she's seducing the guy and is like kissing him and saying, oh, I'm here for you alone. And like, again, it's not that like you look at Lady Wisdom and think, oh, that's really good. And then you look at Folly and say like, oh, I would never want that. No, like Folly knows how to get your attention. And it may even be like you were alluding to earlier, April, is you might look at the two and say like, oh, I'm not worthy of like the feast over here. Like I should just go over here to Folly's house because like, I mean, she'll take me in, you know. That's all I'm worthy of, really. And like, and that's just not biblical. That's not right. Like God values us and takes us in. But sometimes we feel like, oh, I've just been so stupid. I guess that I just kind of have to. No, like God gives us so much more value than that. And so don't settle for folly when wisdom's door is wide open and want is inviting you in. You, of course, we're unworthy, but don't keep going to folly's house. The doors are wide open on both sides here. So I just think that's really notable. She's seductive, but it says she knows nothing, right? She's crafty, but really she doesn't know anything. So remember the invitation at the early part of the chapter, verse 4, whoever's symbol, let him turn in here. And in verse 5, where did she get her bread and her wine?
She made it,
right? It's like homemade, home-cooked meal. Look at verse 17. What's folly offering?
Stolen water and secret bread.
Stolen water and secret bread, right? It's like undercover bread. And I think the idea here is probably it's stolen, right? It's like if you steal something, you don't just like eat it out there. I mean, I hate to use this analogy, but like Aladdin, you know, like they steal the bread and then they're eating everything. But you know what I'm saying? Like you hide it because you know if they see me eating this, I didn't pay for it. Which that ties back to chapter 7, right? It talks about like chapter 5, like don't disperse your water everywhere, like drink from your own well, your own cistern. So the water imagery is consistent. But do you see that idea is like folly is like, hey, you don't have to pay for this because I stole it. It's not her being generous. It's her just inviting you to share in the crime, to share in the like, hey, it's fun. Like, and there is kind of a thrill to that, right? Like, hey, like, you want this secret stuff? You know, like nobody knows about this. Like, hey, you should have this. I mean, there's kind of an appeal to that, right? They're like the thrill of the forbidden. And it's like the whole idea of like the forbidden fruit in the garden, right? It's like, ooh, like, that's the one no-no. Like that makes it more enticing. It's because I have permission to do all the other stuff. I don't have permission to do the one thing. And again, we shouldn't feel that way, but we do, don't we? It's like there's the thing we know we shouldn't do, but that makes it almost more enticing. And so she's like, hey, I stole this bread. It's yours if you want it. Or this water, you know, stolen water is sweet. Bread eating in secret is pleasant. And again, saying, oh, it's sweet, it's pleasant. It's you're going to like it right now. Whereas you would also enjoy the feast in wisdom's house. But I don't know. It's just interesting seeing the contrast in these two feasts. But again, what is the young man told in verse 18? This is almost the narrator like breaking in here, like, but he did not know that this is happening, right?
What Friedman's voice.
Yes, yes. Little did he know. That's right. The debtor. So it sounds good, right? But do you notice what wisdom said at the end of her thing? In verse 6, leave your simple ways and
live.
Whereas folly's not telling you where it leads. She's just saying, hey, this is sweet. This is pleasant. You're going to love this. Enjoy it. But he did not know it was death, right? Like, and that's where she gets you. She does not advertise the consequences. She advertises the pleasure up front. Whereas wisdom advertises the cost and the blessing, the good consequences of your actions. And that's what Proverbs is trying to do, is it's trying to say, hey, look at the consequences. Read the label before you go down that path.
Hey, Stephen.
Your comments. Proverbs 9. Yeah. Yes.
Real quick, that last verse there, verse 18, is another, I think, reference back to chapter 7 with the adulterous woman, because there in chapter 7, verse 27, it talks about her house is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death. And so the end is kind of the same, just as a lot of the imagery is.
Yes, that's exactly right. And we talked about, you know, chapter 7 is about sexual sin, but it's not just about sexual sin. It's about like any of these enticing things that draw us in. Sexual sin is one of the primary ones that we see right now. And it's always been one of the primary ones, but all of these things apply. That those things lead to death. Don't go down her path. By the way, that last word of chapter 18, her guests are in the depths of Sheol. That's a weird word. We never use that word. What does Sheol mean?
It's the grave.
It's the grave. Yeah. And so some translations put hell there. It's probably better translated to grave, because it will talk sometimes in the Old Testament about how the righteous and the wicked all go to Sheol. It's just the idea of where all the dead go, the realm of the dead. And it also is used in a negative sense here of like, if you are a guest in Folly's house, her guests end up in the grave. Like, that's a consequence. It's a bad thing. It is used synonymous with death here, is the idea. But if you see that word Sheol, that's what that word means, literally. It's just the realm of the dead. Yeah, Tim?
Verse 18 also reminds me of the woman in chapter 7, where in verse 25 it says, "Let not your heart turn aside to her ways." Verse 26, "For many a victim she has laid low, and all her slain are a mighty thong. Her house is the way to Sheol."
Yeah. It's exactly like the same end. Yeah. Somebody online had a comment
a second ago. I was just going to mention real quick. It's interesting how verse 5, he says, "Come eat of my bread, drink of the wine I have mixed." And then 17, it's not wine, it's stolen water. So just like the difference in quality there, water versus wine.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
I was also going to just mention real brief, like, and I guess we're kind of talking about this a little bit, but it reminds me of really God versus Satan, where, which makes sense, foolish, wise versus foolish, but where God promises to us to follow him and our life becomes better and we get blessings versus Satan. He, you know, the result is death, and that's just like foolishness.
Yes, that's exactly right. And Proverbs is trying to show us the consequences, because sometimes when we hear wisdom's call, all we hear is the cost. All we hear is like, "Oh, but I have to give up my ways. But I really like my ways. I want to keep living like this." And we may even realize, like, "I realize my ways are dumb. Like, I know this isn't working, but I'm used to it. I'm so used to it. And like, it's comfortable, it's easy, I don't have to change anything." And all we can see is the cost. Proverbs is inviting us to see past the cost, because there's two costs in this situation, right? With wisdom, the cost is kind of up front, right? You gotta pay immediately. Like, this is gonna be hard. It's day one at the gym, right? You don't get buff day one at the gym. It just hurts. Like, there's no payoff day one at the gym, right? The cost is up front. What's the cost of not going to the gym? Day 300, you know, whatever, and not going to the gym. There's a cost. Like, you hurt, and it's a different kind of pain. But it's almost like, I've heard it put this way. There's the pain of discipline, or there's the pain of regret. Mm-hmm. Two different pains, right? You get to make the choice. Pain of discipline hurts now. Pain of regret hurts later. I'll put it off, you know. Well, you just chose your pain. You just chose your pain. And that's really what Proverbs is doing for us, is saying, hey, there is a cost. It is going to be hard, but it's so much better to do the hard stuff now and reap the benefits later than do the easy thing now and get hard stuff later. It sounds so good when we talk about in a circle like this, right? Then you go out in the world and you're like, oh man, that's really hard. All right, so that's the introduction to Proverbs. 2 months later, we're now ready to read the rest of the Proverbs. So any other comments or questions you guys have on chapter 9? Well, it is 8:00 exactly. Any comments, questions on chapter 9?
Sin for it to be this hot.
I know, right? It is getting warmer and warmer. We're gonna have to, I'm glad it's working. We just now need to get it to work at the proper level. I'm also cooking over here. And also it makes us all sleepy. Yeah. Okay. Any other comments from you guys online? Be good. All right. Let's go ahead and wrap up with a prayer. But if y'all want to stick around for a minute after the prayer, we'll talk about if y'all have a preference on how we approach the next bunch of chapters, because there's different ways to do this. But let's have a prayer first, and then we will talk about that. Angie, would you close us up with a prayer? Sure.
Our Father, we love you, and we're so grateful for opportunities that we have to gain wisdom, to learn from the word that you've given us. You have made your word and your wisdom abundantly available. Help us to heed the call of wisdom that we've heard tonight and give up our own ways and be willing to replace them with yours, knowing that it's so much better for us. Please help us during times when we hear other calls to have faith in you, to trust in you, and to trust in your promises that your way is in fact better. Give us strength in those moments and help everything we do here to be an encouragement to us as we leave. It's in your Son's name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen.